year is 1661, and Spain has gone through many decades of instability. After rocketing to world prominence in the 16th century with Carlos I, or Charles V, the Emperor, and Felipe II, also known as Philip II, the next two rulers, Felipe III and Felipe IV, failed to live up to that legacy. They relied heavily on their personal favorite advisors or ministers known as validos, and as a result, Spain's prestige and influence began to suffer. Its economy had its ups and downs, mostly downs, and regions like Catalonia challenged the authority of the king and even attempted to break away from the country by forming a republic, albeit briefly. Spain also lost its territories, or some of its territories, such as the Low Countries, which is now today the Netherlands and Belgium, and also Portugal. And in addition to that, it paid a heavy price for getting involved in so many religious wars, and that resulted in a decline in population. It also hurt the economy. And it also created massive debt, which would end up being a kind of phantom lingering over progress in this country for many, many years. Now, Felipe IV had many children, both legitimate and illegitimate children, but it was his sons who interested him the most because, by law, they were the ones who would become the direct heirs to the throne. However, they all died young, so in his final years, we had a bit of a crisis there, threatening the future of the Habsburg family. But finally, in 1661, a son was born and was christened Carlos, or Charles, and he would become Carlos II, the next king. And he came basically in the nick of time because Felipe IV died just 4 years later, when Carlos was a little boy. So his mother, Mariana of Austria, would take over as regent until he was capable of ruling for himself, which in some ways would never happen. You see, the reign of Carlos II is often looked upon as representing the end of Spain's role as a major power and the decline of the great Spanish Empire itself. And it also announced the end of the Habsburg dynasty in Spain. Now, that second part is true because Carlos would die childless. And as a result, a new family or a new dynasty would come in and take over. But we'll get to that in a second. But the other part has to do with the fact that Carlos suffered from enormous health issues. And that hindered him throughout his life. Traditionally, this has been attributed to generations of intra-family relationships, intermarrying, inbreeding, marriages between first cousins, uncles and nieces, etc., and that led to inevitable genetic disorders. And basically, Carlos became a living example of that. And it seems quite possible that his genetic makeup played some role, if not a major role, in his multiple maladies. But today, experts sort of debate just how much and still haven't reached a consensus on what he actually had. But whatever it wasn't good or pretty. First-hand descriptions of the newborn baby might have been exaggerated somewhat, but they certainly didn't paint a pretty picture. The French ambassador listed a number of visible abnormalities and basically summed it up saying he was frighteningly ugly. And from the very start, this poor individual had the cards stacked against him. Just about any and every disease a child could get entered his body: measles, smallpox, mumps, German measles, chickenpox. It goes on and on. His development was slow, both physical and intellectual, and his misfortunes were such that superstitious Spain bestowed upon him the name El Hechizado, or Bewitched, because they thought he had suffered from a curse, or at least some people did. in the court. And around Europe, people pretty much assumed that he would not survive very long. Basically, that from the day of his birth, they were waiting for him to die. But that wouldn't come for many, many years. In any event, his ailing health has always sort of traditionally come to represent the anemic and ailing situation of Spain and the Spanish Empire at the time. It was sort of a convenient comparison that over the years has proven to be somewhat exaggerated. So let's take a look at that. Because you see, despite all these dramatics here about his physical condition, the situation in Spain was much more complex and in many ways had nothing to do with Carlos's reign. To begin with, many of the problems that were affecting this country, Carlos had inherited from the policies, decisions, and failures of Felipe III and Felipe IV, who were his grandfather and father, respectively. So Carlos not only had many personal health problems working against him, he also had a legacy that were making things even tougher. These included the menace of foreign countries, commercial competition from the Dutch and the English were making things complicated for Spain's economy. And then you had the rising power of Louis XIV, the powerful Sun King, who was constantly searching for ways to take away parts of the Spanish domains or the Spanish Empire. Seeing that the king was a bit of a pushover, he wanted to exploit this weakened position and that had made it so vulnerable. And then you had the economy, which continued to struggle the way it had for many, many years. It was certainly one of the most pressing concerns. It had struggled for as long as anyone could remember, despite all this wealth coming in from the Americas, the gold and the silver, especially the silver. And the main cause was the mishandling of the money, misappropriation, the paying off of debts, these huge debts that seemed to never end, and these constant wars, which were doing nothing good for the economy in Spain. Anyway, despite the bad press that Carlos has received over the centuries, contemporary revisionists have given his reign a second look and noticed that maybe it wasn't so bad after all. Just maybe he wasn't this bumbling idiot historians had portrayed him to be for so long. In fact, the sense is that he didn't do such a bad job at all. He may not have been this super alpha macho ruler, maybe something like his contemporary Louis XIV, but he probably knew that and he was aware of his limitations, which certainly is a sign of strength and a sign of sensibility. And as a result, he let better prepared individuals handle those matters. Now, that's always a risky thing to do, but in his case, it didn't work out too badly because Carlos was surrounded by fairly capable ministers and advisors. One of them was there when he was actually quite young. It was his half-brother, Juan José of Austria. Juan José was actually the only illegitimate son that his father, Felipe IV, ever recognized as being his own. He had many others. As a result, he was given an education and upbringing of kind of like a prince, even though he would never become one. Juan José was intelligent, skilled, and well-liked, well-admired. But unfortunately, he died in 1679 when Carlos was still quite young. He was 18. And that was unfortunate for him. He was replaced by the Count of Oropesa. His real name is actually a lot longer than that, but we'll stick to this one because it's easier. Who served as the king's favorite on two occasions, the first time between 1685 and 1690, and then again in 1698. He tried in vain to fix this dire economic situation that Spain suffered from. His intentions were right, but they weren't successful at first. But anyway, the strategies he set for the country would be used in the future. So he really wasn't off base. Now, ultimately, Carlos, as time went by, was commissioned, so to speak, with the mission of focusing on having an heir. At this point, a male or a female would have done, because Spanish succession laws favored males but allowed for females to rule in the absence of a male. But no matter what, this was an impossible thing to do because he was sterile. His first wife was Maria Luisa of Orleans. She was French, and she was the niece of Louis XIV. She had spent most of her short life in the splendor of palace environs in and around Paris, the good life. So she was quite distraught when she learned that she had to marry the King of Spain, especially when she learned what he was like. She also wasn't too excited about going to Spain, because it was sort of a step away from the luxury and a step towards a stricter lifestyle that you found in that country, a more puritanical lifestyle, and partly because she was in love with someone else. But anyway, deals were deals back then, and she had to accept it. So at the age of 17, she moved to Spain to marry and hopefully have many children. Now, I'm very serious about this issue because that's the way people looked at it back then. And as time went by and they didn't have a baby, you know, the people, the everyday people, the common people, I guess we'll put it that way, began to whisper and wonder what was going on. And there's a famous song that they constantly use when reference to this woman in Spanish. I'll read it in Spanish because it makes more sense, and then I'll explain. It says, "Parid, bella flor de lis, en aflicción tan extraña, si París, París a España, si no París, a París." They're using a sort of pun because París is the name of the city, Paris, in Spanish. But París is also an old way of saying you give birth. So basically you're saying if you give birth, you give birth to Spain. And if you don't give birth, back to Paris. It makes more sense in Spanish. Anyway, that just gives you an idea of how important this mission was. Anyway, after 10 years and many attempts, it became clear to her that she would not conceive, and she knew the reason why. Unfortunately, other people put the blame on her. She was forced to consume all sorts of potions and God knows what to increase her fertility, but it was to no avail, obviously, because people were ignoring the true source of the problem. Regardless, despite the forced nature of their marriage, Carlos was head over heels about her, and she apparently grew to feel true love for him. In fact, when she died at the age of 26 of appendicitis, and this was in 1689, and she was in the palace called the Alcázar at the time in Madrid, she apparently said to him that you may love, many women may love you, or you may love many women, but no one will love you as much as I did. So that was sort of a sweet thing to say. And it also probably gives us an idea of what Carlos was really like, despite his physical challenges, we'll put it that way. But anyway, with her dying, the monarchy was thrown into a state of panic. There was no telling how long Carlos would survive with his physical problems and his health issues, and a new wife needed to be found to give at least a final desperate attempt, once again sort of that Hail Mary pass in search of conception. Anyway, the next up to bat, how's that for a mashed metaphor, was Marie Anne of Newburgh, who had been brought in as a substitute basically because, well, for many reasons, but one of them was the fact that her family was sort of known for its fertility. She herself was the 12th of, I've read 24 babies. So they thought, my God, she definitely has the genes to have kids. You get the feeling they were looking for someone who could just basically get pregnant practically by looking at them. Unfortunately, we all know that it isn't that simple, and once again, it soon became clear that nothing could be done. This is confirmed by the fact that Carlos himself, along with his advisors, began to search for an heir, one to be chosen by the king and left in writing in his will. So they were saying, this is it. Time's running out. We have to do something. I won't have kids. There were two basically real options, and both had fairly legitimate claims. One was from the Habsburgs in Germany, and the other was from another branch of the family, which happened to be a member of the Bourbons in France. This made a lot of people nervous in Europe, and I'll tell you why in a second. But anyway, the first choice was actually really neither. It was suggested by the Count of Oropesa, and it was a boy, a young boy named Joseph Ferdinand, and he was from Bavaria. He was just 6 when this was declared, but he died very soon after that, in fact, before Charles himself died, so a new candidate had to be put forward. That ended up being the cause of a dispute that would unfold into a major war known as the War of Spanish Succession. Now, why would something like this happen? Well, in part because what was really up for grabs was not a throne, but the entire Spanish Empire. And Carlos's death would mean a huge power vacuum, and a number of outcomes could tilt the balance of power too far in favor of one side and not the other. And that concerned not only the French and the Austrians, or those two families, but other people like the English and the Portuguese and the Dutch. You see, the Habsburg choice was another man named Charles, and the French option was a man named Philip of Anjou, or Felipe. Now, if it were Charles, that would mean that the power of the Holy Roman Empire would once again unite with Spain and its overseas territories, and France wasn't too keen on that idea. However, if it was Philip of Anjou, that would go to the Bourbons, and the Holy Roman Empire wasn't too keen on that idea, nor were the Dutch or the English. So you can see this mess and this whole tension building up. And all sorts of proposals were made to decide who that heir would be. These included breaking up parts of the Spanish territories in Europe. And most of these proposals and ideas didn't even bother consulting the Spanish on this matter and what they thought. To Carlos's credit, probably under the advice of his ministers, he was dead set against the territories being split up. He said, whatever we do, Spain is not going to be broken up. So it seems he wasn't as feeble as people for many years took him for. Anyway, Carlos first picked the Habsburg house, this Charles guy, but then made a last-minute switch to Philip of Anjou, who was the grandson of Louis XIV and a member of the Bourbons. That was basically just before he died. Anyway, Carlos's health got worse in his final years as his body began to succumb to its numerous issues. He died on November 1st, 1700. A post-mortem autopsy, and that was done on him, painted a less than flattering picture of his inner health, with details including a testicle that was tiny and black as coal, certainly explaining the infertility, and a brain that was full of water. Now, countless diagnoses have been determined to try and figure out what he actually suffered from. The biggest candidates seem to be pituitary hormone deficiency and distal renal tubular acidosis, and possibly even hydrocephalus, which explained the water in his brain. Nowadays, most feel he suffered from a condition known as Klinefelter syndrome, a genetic condition that results when a boy is born with an extra copy of the X chromosome. Symptoms include delayed development, slowness in general, slow to talk or to speak, slow to move, slow to learn, weakness, small reproductive organs, sterility. Basically, Carlos fit most of those, and that's what many people think it was. But once again, in the absence of genetic material, genetic evidence, it's hard to say. I wish they could do just go in and find out, because it'd be interesting to know what they came up with. But one thing is for sure, it was basically a miracle that he lived for as long as he did. Anyway, he did die, and what usually happens in these situations when so much is at stake is that once that person dies, none of the interested parties respect the deceased's last wishes. Felipe, or Philip of Anjou, had a legal right to the throne according to the will, but he would still have to fight it out. And that will become the War of the Spanish Succession, and we will tell you more about that in our next episode. But anyway, to sum up, Spain did not fall apart under the reign of Carlos II. If anything, it more or less stabilized and even began a timid recovery. The economy was still a major concern, but at least the foundations of a sensible economic plan and policy based on balancing budgets, controlling spending, etc., had been established, and that would help the country down the road. The empire stayed pretty much the same, and potential enemies like Louis XIV were kept pretty much in check. Carlos also improved relations with the different regions and kingdoms within Spain. The Catalans apparently were particularly satisfied with him. His ministers made agrarian reforms, helped the textile industry to recover, and even reduced taxes. So despite being much maligned throughout history, almost the laughingstock of Spanish royalty, the fact is it appears he was much more active, sensible, and productive than what he was given credit for. He was also said to have been a very charming, generous, and basically just a good man, and a sensitive one too. Here are a couple of examples for you. In the late 1600s, African slaves were escaping from the English colony of South Carolina and seeking safe haven in Spanish-controlled Florida. In 1693, Carlos made a royal decree stating that all slaves that reached that territory would be considered free, as long as they converted to Catholicism, of course, and a town was founded for them to start a new life. That town became Santa Teresa de Mossey, and eventually Fort Mossey. It no longer exists, but you can visit the remains in Florida today. And it would become the first legally created black settlement in what would be the United States. Another moment took place in Madrid at the very end of his reign, in a social rebellion known as the Mutiny of the Cats. Cat being a term for a person from Madrid. It's still used sometimes. The people rose up against the government when the price of food, especially basics like bread, meat, and wine, rose so high that the population was starving. The mob went to the house of the Count of Oropesa, the minister, to drag him out and probably lynch him. And the men who defended him there were killed, but the Count managed to escape. To make a long story short, the multitude took its grievances to the king at the palace, and they wouldn't calm down until he appeared on the balcony. They asked for forgiveness for having killed the people in the count's house. The king, realizing the seriousness of the situation and aware that people were suffering from extreme poverty, addressed them saying, "I forgive you, and I ask you to do the same and forgive me, for I have not been aware of your needs, and I will see to it that they are met." Now that, my friends, in my opinion, if this is true, and if his intentions were real, is a true sign of a good leader, a humble leader, and certainly not the words or the actions of a half-wit. And I will leave you with that thought for today. And that will be the end of this episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.